Imagine taking a small family business and turning it into a multi-billion dollar business empire. Have you ever used Parachute coconut oil? You know whose brainchild that is? That's Harsh Mariwala's brainchild. The company he formed was called Marico, and it's the company that's competed with a zillion FMCG companies over its 50 years of existence and still come out on top. Still maintained its relevance, still made massive profits. This is a candid conversation with Harsh Mariwala. These are all the questions I always wanted to ask the man because I've studied about him ever since I began my own business journey. These are all the questions I always wanted to ask Mr. Mariwala since I ever heard about him, since I began my own business journey. So it was partly me diving into his mindset and partly me asking him all my genuine business questions. These are the 30 minutes of my life I value a lot, and I hope that it brings you the same amount of value, especially if you're someone who's extremely ambitious and if you're someone who wants to grow out massive businesses in your own life. I promise you, you're going to enjoy this conversation with a real-life, down-to-earth billionaire. Harsh Mariwala on The Ranveer Show. Harsh Mariwala, sir, it's great having you on The Ranveer Show. You're a massive business idol for a lot of young entrepreneurs in this country. I have two very impactful and almost rude questions to ask you to begin with. The first question is, they say that 9 out of 10 coconuts grown in India are actually used to make Parachute coconut oil.
I don't remember the exact numbers, but we use a substantial number of coconuts in India. I think 9 out of 10 may be an exaggeration, but a substantial part of our requirement, we are the biggest coconut buyers, I would say, in the world. That's and cool. We consume huge quantities in crores, I would say, in a year.
Yeah, I think every single Indian, at least that I know of, or during my lifetime, has used Parachute coconut tail at some point.
Yes, I think 1 out of 3 Indians uses Parachute. So that itself shows that, you know, there are... And we sell something like between India and Bangladesh and Middle East, we sell something like every month we sell 5 crore containers or bottles every month.
Wow.
So it's a very wide usage.
When you were starting out in the 70s, in the early 70s, so you inherited a small business from your family? And I mean, I won't say it's small, but you inherited a business from your family?
It was very small at that time, but it was mainly the edible oil business was mainly selling edible oils to in an unbranded form.
Right.
To industries in bulk barrels and big tins, which was again sold loose to the consumers.
Yeah.
And I basically converted that business from unbranded to branded.
Yeah. You took a call of using plastic bottles.
Correct.
You took a call of making it more consumer friendly, focused on marketing, branding.
True.
I think that's kind of what a lot of young second generation entrepreneurs even today are trying to do, where they're saying whatever the parents give them and trying to grow it into basically what you've done.
Yes.
So, it's a straight question now. And this is something a lot of young people want to know, sir.
Yeah, yeah.
After you've become a billionaire or, you know, after you've reached what the world calls you, like after you've reached that pedestal, what does life become like then?
From now on, you're saying, or from the time I became a billionaire or so?
Now, how do you feel?
I feel very good. I really feel on top of the world. I am a fitness freak, so I exercise every day. And I keep myself very fit. And in this pandemic, I'm spending more time on fitness. So I'm feeling very good. Money beyond a point does not impact me. And I'm not a kind of person who leads a flashy lifestyle. So relatively simple lifestyle.
Yeah.
So the so-called wealth has not impacted me personally. Or in terms of lifestyle. I don't think I'll ever own a plane or a big bungalow or anything like that. You know, I'm comfortable with what I have.
Yeah.
And many I think ways, that keeps me much more grounded, humble.
Right.
And also, I would say that I'm far more happier. Because, you know, the artificial so-called stimulants, you may call it, or so-called, you know, possessions. don't add to happiness, you know.
Yeah.
You have to be happy internally.
Yeah. They say that the more possessions you have, the likely the more suffering you're prone to.
And then you are wanting next and next, what next. So, you know, that in my case, that next doesn't come only, you know.
Yeah. But what is it like roaming in those circles? Like when you see people around you who may not think the way you do, but have reached that same level in their careers. Does everyone think that way?
Not necessarily. Not necessarily.
Okay. It's different.
I think each person is built differently.
Okay.
For some people, they want to enjoy spending more, shall I say, resources, whether it's their own lifestyle or their spending. I'm not saying my lifestyle has not improved. It has improved. Yes, some amount of wealth is important to lead a comfortable lifestyle, but it doesn't go beyond a certain point, you know, and it doesn't impact whether I'm right. X or X plus in terms of wealth, you know.
Yeah. So, sir, I mean, when I talk to you, even now, I feel like you're a very busy person, even though you have the choice of not being busy. So, why do you choose to be busy even now?
I am the kind of person who likes to keep oneself occupied. You know, I need to be mentally occupied.
Okay.
And
is that the motivation?
It's not necessarily, but I have to be mentally occupied. I cannot just sit without doing anything.
Mm.
Sometimes I think I have to learn to just relax, you know, which I can't. And there is art of doing nothing, they say. Mm. So it's difficult for me to do that. But I'm trying to. This whole pandemic also has taught me to be far more patient. I'm very impatient as a person. So I need to create my own work. So it's not necessarily that it is related to business. So whether it's fitness or whether it is whatever, I play golf or I have to keep myself busy, you know.
Right. Like even your leisure activities have some amount of growth in them, I feel.
I think ultimately life is learning, you know, and life is doing new things,
right?
And learning from mistakes and taking some risks and experimenting, and right. So it's important to experiment, to learn, and to fail also.
Yeah. So I mean, I'm gonna get to failure, your story, but I have one burning question in my head, which is that while you have the blessing of career success, material success, wealth, and I feel you also have a blessing of humility, where you're not really chasing all the artificial pleasures as you spoke of. But what is the curse of your life? Because no human has it perfect ever. And from the outside, people see successful people and think that, okay, everything's perfect.
I don't know. I'm very difficult to pinpoint. I have very good health.
Yeah.
I have good family. I have two grandchildren, which are my biggest source of joy. And luckily, they just stay one floor below me.
Hmm.
So I meet them every day. I enjoy playing golf. I play golf now 2 to 3 times a week. I have a good friend circle, good social circle. So all in all, I'm lucky that I'm very fortunate that I'm blessed with all these positives, you know.
Do you ever have like negative days even now?
I think I would say some frustrating days when things don't come out as planned, or, you know, business, there are failures, there are some setbacks. So
even
sometimes
today?
I mean, not big ones which is going to put you back, but something which is supposed to happen. For example, a new product you may have launched may not do as well as you thought.
Mm.
Or a new service in Kaya which may not do that well. But nothing earth-shaking.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more, I would say, as I said, frustrations rather than big stress,
right.
Stress points, you know.
So like with your family and with your grandkids, if you could pass on only like one piece of advice to them out of all the pieces of advice, while I know it's just a hypothetical scenario, what would that one piece be?
See, I think two things I would say. One piece is difficult. One is to, I think each person is born with certain inherent God-given gifts. And most of us don't know what are our God-given gifts. And we try to emulate somebody else because that's the fashion, like, you know. Okay, I have to emulate somebody else. My grandfather, for example, I'm talking about my grand. They need not, you know. They have to figure out what is their God-given gifts and how can they leverage it, you know. And to find out, first is to find out what is their God-given gift. And many of us don't know. And the process of finding out is actually talking to a lot of other people. Your family, your friends. And they will tell you are like this and you are very good at this. Now, if you pursue a career which is based on your gifts, the chances of your enjoying that journey is much more rather than doing something which you don't enjoy. And the chances of success also are higher. So I would say that identify your strengths, leverage your strengths. And I have a 75-25% rule. 75% of my strengths, I will try and work on my strengths, improving my strengths. And 25%, I will try and nullify my weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, it is the opposite. You know, every person tries to say, okay, where am I weak? And I try to improve. But if you work on your strengths and, you know, choose some vocation which is based on your strengths, your chances of success will be much, much more. And if you have some fatal flaws in terms of your weaknesses, then, of course, you need to rectify them as early as possible. So, that's one. Number two, I think every person, they say passion is important. Of course, passion is important. But passion has to be combined with determination and perseverance. So, the word is grit. And I think grit is very important, you know. Because if I have passion in doing something and if I don't have the perseverance, if I don't do well, and I mean, every person goes through failures. If I have that determination, perseverance, I'll try again. But if I don't have, I'll just give it up. So, grit is very important to succeed in life.
Yeah. So, with what you're doing at Marico, technically you're competing with some very big international players and you have done that throughout your life. So, what is that Indian mentality that you've brought in which has dominated the market? Like, how has an Indian company kind of beaten those international players?
So, I would say twofold. One is the certain inherent belief that Indians can also, the pride of being an Indian and Indian FMCG company in a sector where a lot of multinationals are active. Now, in many Indian companies have actually are doing well, but you have more multinationals. And if you look at the overall market for FMCG, a substantial part of it would be dominated by multinationals. So, that pride of creating something, something Indian was something always in my mind.
A driving factor?
One of the driving factors. And then choosing certain categories and in which the multinationals are not that active. So, the portfolio choice of businesses where you can succeed played a very important role. And in some categories of business we are in and where we are market leaders, these multinationals are not present.
Right.
So, the fact that they were not leveraging those opportunities and we were able to do so, I think that made us succeed in the marketplace.
Right. So, I read about a lot of nuggets from your life and how you were a young, brash person in the 70s. You kind of evolved into something else in the 80s, something else in the 90s. So, the question I have for you is, how have you changed through the decades? If you could take me through each decade, and how has the nature of business in India changed?
So, I have changed a lot. I have changed a lot from the time I started. I started off as a very, I would say, very non-confident, introvert person. I was not sure, though I think I had a good business mind, but I've always been an introvert, you know, in the past. I've changed now. I don't think I'm an introvert anymore. But a lot of my energy came out of my looking within myself, you know, in the initial phases. What do I need to do? How do I make a mark?
Just thinking?
Thinking through, reading, talking to some people. So, I think you have to go on thinking, you know. So, many of my initiatives which I undertook, whether it is managing the family, you know, I was a part of a very large joint family, you know. My father, three of my uncles, five of my cousins, all together in the business. So, how do you navigate to carve out your own identity was one big step. Then, when we started Marico, how do you build a culture in an organization? What's relevant and how culture can help an organization succeed? Then the portfolio choice I talked about, what kind of products, what kind of categories of products you should go into which will help you succeed. Then the role on innovation, you know, I think whenever we've innovated, we've seen a discontinuous impact if that innovation has succeeded. So, how can you create a culture of innovation was again another thing which one had to read a lot, talk a lot, because I think many Indian organizations at that time were not paying attention to the culture part. And then as we grew, we said that what is the role of the organization, you know? It's not just for helping shareholders and creating wealth for shareholders. The organization exists for all the stakeholders. And all the stakeholders are interlinked. So, whether it is your consumers, your employees, your shareholders, your associates you're working with, or the society. And you need to walk that extra mile in ensuring that you are adding value to each stakeholder. Mm-hmm. And if you're able to add value to each stakeholder, then, all of them, as I said, are interconnected. It'll help some other stakeholder. So, this whole purpose journey is something which we embarked about 10, 15 years back. And now it's being talked about in a lot of management circles that one has to look at all the stakeholders and not just shareholders.
I read somewhere that from getting to $0 to $1 million, it's about hard work and an idea. But from, say, $1 million and beyond, it's entirely about humans and how you handle emotional equations, how you handle psychology.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
So I think the role of entrepreneur changes, you know, as you grow. And when you are at a startup stage, you're also going through a learning curve and you're doing things on your own. So everything, because the scale is small, you're not able to attract talent. You are actually doing everything or most of the things. You may have some clerical help, some help, but most of the decisions are taken by you. So that is the stage when you're doing things. As you grow, as you rightly put it, above a certain stage, then you can't handle everything on your own. So you start recruiting people. And then once you start recruiting people, then that means you are getting things done from others. And it's a very different role. And most entrepreneurs don't realize that when you shift from doing things to getting things done, your role changes substantially. Because then you are not doing things. You are recruiting talent, empowering them, ensuring that they work in a team. Just alignment in terms of what is going to be your role and your colleague's role. And it's a very different way of managing business. And I find that many entrepreneurs don't shift gears when they change from doing things to getting things done. Because if you don't create the right culture, if you don't have the right talent, if you don't delegate, if you don't empower, then you'll not be able to attract good talent. If you're not able to attract good talent, then you'll not be able to grow because there is a limit to which you can do things on your own. And you have to ultimately delegate and empower if you have to grow. So that's the second stage. So doing things to getting things done. And when you become much larger, you're not even getting things done. You're influencing others. You're influencing large number of people by talking in big forums and writing about it and, you know, things like that. Because then your role is to influence, inspire. Not your own team, but inspire, influence, you know, if there's an organization journey, reinforce some of the initiatives. For example, if I have to create innovation, how can I influence people? I can have innovation awards within the organization. I can have, whenever there's a review taking place, I can talk about what are the innovative things you're doing. I can write about innovation and, you know, share it with my people. So people in the organization know that innovation is very, very important. So that's my way of influencing to others that innovation is something. I want you to take risk. Don't be afraid of failure. Experiment. So that role as the business grows larger is shifts from getting things done to influencing others. And again, there's a big shift in terms of the role of entrepreneur. And I think if you have to grow into a large organization, a successful organization, which will sustain over a period of time, your role has to shift. And I think it's very important for organizations and entrepreneurs to ensure that, and most of the time I've seen that entrepreneurs may have very good idea, very good business at a small scale, but they are just not able to grow because of these issues. And most of the problems are with the entrepreneurs themselves in terms of the shifts they have to make. They are too control focused. They don't trust others. Sometimes, yes, there is a risk in trusting others. Sometimes things may go wrong, but what is the option? You can't go on doing things all your life. You know, if you want to do that, then you'll always be small.
Yeah. So in terms of scaling up on a very personal level, like other than this reinvention tip that you've given, would you give any other tip to entrepreneurs on a very personal human level? Like if you want to keep growing, if you want to keep scaling up, what do you have to keep in mind?
So I would say that, you know, it's a very highly competitive environment. You may succeed initially when you have started a business based on whatever reason you have succeeded. But don't let that success go into your head because it's a matter of time. Competition will catch up with you. So you need to improve upon what I call the right to win. So how are you winning in the marketplace? So depending on the kind of business you are in, it may be something innovative. It could be some pioneering move you've done, or it could be some technology you have developed, or it could be something service-related thing which you have done which is making you succeed. So you need to work on these things which will keep you two steps ahead of competition.
Right.
And unless you are able to do that, it's a matter of time. Others will copy you and you may not be able to retain that edge. So a perpetual thrust on creating a right to win is very, very important for any organization.
Okay.
Secondly, I would say that talent plays a very important role. And at every opportunity, entrepreneurs should take initiatives to improve the quality of talent which exists within them. For example, if there is a vacancy or if there's a resignation or a new position is created, you try to recruit somebody who is better than earlier. So you are continuously enhancing the talent pool within the organization. And then how do you retain good talent is another challenge, you know, because if you are known in the job market that you have very good talent, then you will become a poaching ground for other organizations. And some people will leave. So how do you ensure that it's just not money which will keep people with you? You have to create the right culture. You have to give the right challenge to people to grow. So culture building, challenge, growth is something which will keep people with you. And not just monetarily because you're paying them higher, you know. Money has a limited role. Of course, it has a role. But beyond that, I think you have to keep your talent engaged in creating the right culture. They should be enjoying working with you. Yeah. They should be looking forward to the next day. What will I want to go back to office rather than say, oh my God, I have to go to work, you know.
Right. So have you seen Bad Boy Billionaires on Netflix?
Bad Boy, the new one, which is Vijay Malhotra. Yeah, sorry.
So, I mean, what goes wrong at that level? Where, like, as a human being, you know, is it greed? Is it wanting more? Like, what happens?
I would say that some things. One is depending on, you know, in case of Vijay Malhotra, it was, I don't think it was as much greed, but it was more stubbornness to go into an airline business.
Headstrong?
Yeah, headstrong. I have to be in airline and I will succeed, and not willing to listen to others. And I think he should have exited that business much earlier. And he acquired that other Deccan Air also. He should not have done so. So I would say that headstrong in terms of wanting to get into a business which became like his passion, and not exiting out of that business. If he had exited, he should have been, because all other businesses like his liquor and all that still continue to do well. But because he took so much, and that wishful thinking, you know, that things will improve. You can't run a business on wishful thinking. You have to run it on actual
data.
Data, your ability to judge future, what's going to happen to the industry. So I think on Vijay Malhotra, that was the key thing. And then I think his lifestyle also was undoing, you know, because he should have actually, if the company was not doing well, and from what I saw in that episode was that he had a big party for his 50th birthday or something. That creates a very wrong signal, you know, when you're not paid your employees. Of course, he may not have funded his party from the airline money. But people still associate the key promoter, you know, that if he can spend money on such a big for his party, why can't he pay that money, put in that money in the company and pay us, you know. So I would say these are the two things. In some other cases, it was more to do with governance and just being crook. So some of the diamond guys and all, I think it was just cheating others. So it's a combination of bad judgment, not willing to accept your mistakes. Governance is very important. And I think governance is relevant for at every stage in the organization and not necessarily when you're big.
Yeah.
Because if you start taking shortcuts, it'll come back to you. You know, if you start taking shortcuts, if you don't follow the rule of law, it'll hit you. And when it hits you, it'll just puts you back, you know. Yeah. So it's very important to have the right governance, to attract good talent, and just to ensure that, you know, you sometimes it could lead to some delays. It could lead to some extra work, but it's fully worth it.
Yeah. So I also feel like whoever the leader is, that person's character trickles down through the organization.
Yes.
So how much would you say, like, and I know you also have a sense of God and, you know, spirituality. Has that played any role in your business career?
So I would say that to some extent, the culture of the organization is driven from my internal leadership style. Because I was the one who so very open, very transparent, very trusting, willing to take risks, is something which I've always, again, a self-starter. I want people who are motivated from within. So that burning desire to succeed has to be there. So if a person comes in and, you know, he wants to be pampered or he wants to be guided at every stage, that's not us.
Yeah.
Nobody has guided me in my journey. I have taken all my decisions, whatever learning are on my own. So that's the culture which has, I mean, when I saw that people saying that you are not a nurturing organization, it just, I mean, just realized that, okay, a lot of it may have come from me.
But is there any sense of spirituality within you, like to keep going even now?
So I believe, I don't go to temples, okay? So I don't, but I have a strong belief that there is some super force and you have to do the things in the right manner.
Does it play a role in business?
Of course, you have to play a role, because in terms of governance, in terms of fairness, in terms of ethics, it plays a very, very important role. So you have to be very ethical, you have to be very fair, and you have to do things in the right manner. And luckily in my sector, the kind of business we are in, I didn't have to go to the government for any license or anything, you know. And at that time, I'm talking, when I started the business, there was a huge license, Raj. And a lot of entrepreneurs benefited by just getting a license. Thank God I didn't have to do, because I am not cut out for all this greasing palms and all. That's not me. So I would like to go and, you know, sell something to somebody else. If you're running a business, then I cannot pamper you, and you know, that's not me at all. So luckily the kind of business I went into didn't require all this. And I think that helped me also.
Yeah. And so for the 2020s and 2030s, what business advice do you have for the youth of the nation in terms of industries we should look at, or just how we should look about things?
So I think there are, one is because of pandemic, there are huge opportunities which have come up. Of course, it's a big, big area of stress, anxiety for all of us. And we are going through something which we have never imagined we would go through. But having said that, it's a matter of time. Things will improve. I don't know when will that happen, but I reckon within 6 months to 1 year, things will come back to normal. And we are seeing huge opportunities created by this pandemic.
So
like for example, some geopolitical realignments, you know, between China and other parts of the world. Like the whole thrust on hygiene, you know, people are far more hygiene driven. On health, whether it's mental health, spiritual health, or the food you eat. On immunity, you know, you want to be far more immune, you want to take steps, whether it's vitamins or Ayurvedic products or honey or whatever, or superfoods. So, and then the whole exposure to digital learning, you know, and digital exposure. So whether it is e-commerce or e-learning for the kids, or e-prescriptions or e-consultation with the doctors, these are habits we have formed in the last 8-9 months. I could never have imagined working from home. I have not gone to office for the last 7-8 months.
Yeah.
And I am perfectly, I think, I am wondering, do I need to go to office at all? Of course, there is a benefit of meeting people and interacting with them. That's, I am not undermining that. But a lot of times, I would now feel guilty that, you know, if I had to call people to my office from somewhere from far away, I would make them wait for half an hour meeting. They would waste 2.5 hours. Because in a city like Bombay, 1 hour commuting time each way. In future, I will just say, let's do a Zoom call. Because I've got so used to it, and they have also got used to it. I don't need to call people for an interview if I have to interview from, say, Delhi or wherever else. I can do it through Zoom call. So I think we have, a lot of trends which were existing have accelerated. And I think they have thrown up a lot of newer opportunities, you know.
Right.
And I think we should look at those opportunities. In addition to that, I think for any entrepreneurs, you have to, as I said earlier, you have to identify a right to win, you know. So you do something which is unique. You don't try and come do something which is others are doing it because it is growing. You will not be able to succeed if you have a me too product. You have to have something unique. So you try to find out your niche. You should try and leverage your strengths. If I'm not good at technology, no point in me going into a highly technology intensive business. I have to look at what I am good at and try and identify opportunities in areas which I am good at.
So, like, what do you think about, you know, the concept of just human life coming to an end, you know, on a very personal level? Like, do you think about things like that after having such an intense journey?
I think as you grow, your thoughts change. They say first 25 years are for learning. You know, I'm talking earlier days. Next 25 years are for earning. And the next 25 years are for giving, you know. So your desire to give back as you grow increases substantially. Depending on what you can give time, you can give energy, you can give money. In my case, I would like to do all three together because I can afford to give money. But it's just not giving a donation to a hospital or a school or anything. I want to be, I believe in active giving. So I have to be mentally involved. I should spend time on something which I'm giving and not just donating money to an institute or something. But each person has their own way. So I am increasingly spending more and more time on my giving initiatives. What can I do to make a difference to this world? I think that gives you some other type of joy, you know.
Yeah.
And they say, and I was just talking once to Azim Premji, saying he does a lot of giving, saying giving is more difficult than earning and running a business. Because you need to decide whom to give, how, whatever you're giving, is it making an impact? So it's a big challenge, you know, if you want to do active giving in terms of ensuring that you are making an impact.
Right. And do you have any regrets about not being born in the 90s or 2000s and being an entrepreneur now? Are you happy with like the time?
No, I don't think so. One day, I mean, I'm quite practical as a person. So I was born in a certain time. I've enjoyed that part. I've created a business. So I don't have any regrets, no.
But what do 90s born kids have that your generation didn't?
So I think they have far more freedom. They have far more independence. They are far more conscious of environment and, you know, what is going to be the future. They have this purpose within the organization. So I think it's very important that I at one level, I see that, you know, the good kids coming from good families.
People.
I think they are, I like the good qualities in them. Of course, I mean, the bad kids, they would do drugs or something. I mean, that's, but I'm talking of the positive side, you know. Well brought out kids, they have, I think they understand much more the global issues which are going to impact all of us. And it's going to impact them more because some of the environment issues, sustainable issues will get accelerated over a period of time and it would be within their lifestyle. Mm. We didn't think about it as much in our days, you know.
Yeah. But so in terms of business opportunity, what do we have? Like in terms of this new India that's got the internet, that's way more educated.
So I think you've seen so many unicorns coming up in the last few years, you know. So I think there are enough opportunities. And I think big opportunities are in the area of technology, you know. How can technology impact all of us? And India has huge opportunities, whether it's agriculture or whether it's environment or education or healthcare. Can you try and leverage technology to improve the yields of agriculture or to what telecom did to through mobile to reach so many people to in healthcare or education? There are, you've seen the likes of Byju's and, you know, many other learning companies. They have really grown so well in the last few years, you know. So there are enough opportunities. And I think one should look at the positive side.
Beautiful. Actually, sir, before signing off, you're coming out of the book soon, which
yes.
I'm excited about because while researching this interview,
yeah.
I couldn't find the quantity of information I wanted on you. And I feel there's too many stories and morals you've had.
Yeah, I think I have. That's what I realized when I stepped down as managing director of the company. And, you know, I speak a lot at various events on an average at least twice a month. And whenever I spoke about my own journey or any topic which I normally speak on innovation or board management or my own journey or how do you create a culture of innovation, how do you convert a family managed company into a professionally managed company, I used to get a lot of suggestions, why don't you pen your thoughts and write a book. So when I had that time, I said that okay, let me try and do that. And as I said earlier to you, I cannot remain unoccupied. I have to do something. So that's how I started writing a book. And it's almost like almost over. And it should go to the publishers within by November end. And it should be released by March. I have a co-author who is also my mentor. And I have gone to whenever I've had issues, I've spoken to him. His name is Professor Ram Charan. He is a very famous coach internationally. He has written something like 25 or 27 books. Many of them have sold millions and millions of copies. So I'm very fortunate to have him. But most of the writing I have done and he's given his insights into the book. So it captures all my journey from the time I started to till today. And all my failures, what are the learnings out of these failures? I think it's come out well. I'm quite happy with the way it's turning out. And the name of the book is Harsh Reality. So now we're in the final stages of, you know, some shoots on cover and all that. But it's a matter of time. I hope that by March, April, when we are ready to release, things are much more back to normal and people start going to bookshops and see the book. And then we can also hold panel discussions and, you know, more
podcasts.
More coverage, more podcasts also. So I'm looking forward to releasing this book and, you know, getting feedback about the book. But I'm quite sure that it'll help entrepreneurs. It is basically, it is targeted towards entrepreneurs who want to scale up, for entrepreneurs who are in family businesses, for professionals who want to improve the functioning. So there is a lot on culture building. How do you have an effective board of directors? So I think there is, for all professional as well as entrepreneurs, there is a lot of learning in this book.
I think it might be more valuable than modern MBAs, especially from...
Yeah, especially in considering that I'm just a commerce graduate. I have not studied anything further.
Yeah.
But I have worked with hundreds of MBAs, you know, and I have learned a lot from them.
Right.
So I think it's practical knowledge. And I think that makes a much larger impact than just theory.
Beautiful. Harsh Maiwala, sir, thank you.
Thank you.
Huge honor for me talking to you. I asked you a lot of my personal questions.
Not at all.
So this is a half an hour mentoring session pretty much for me. I really appreciate it. If there's any one last message you'd like to give young, motivated entrepreneurs watching it till this point.
So all I can say is this too will pass. Never waste a crisis. This is a crisis. All of us are in the crisis. All of us are in different boats. Some of us are better off. Some of us are not better off. But all I can say, this too will pass. And look at the positive side going forward.
Thank you, sir. Right. Really appreciate it. Thank you.